Good. Okay. Hello. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Free From Half Measures panel discussion. My name is Stephanie, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. When we talk about our program, we refer to working our program. How hard do we need to work the program? Exactly what is a half measure? Pray tell. How can I tell when I'm doing enough or not doing enough? In today's session, we will hear from each of our speakers for 20 minutes, and I'm the timer, and then have questions and answers for the final 20 minutes of our time. Without further delay, I would like to introduce Barbara, who will share with us for 20 minutes.
I don't sing, so I guess I'll talk. Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm a compulsive overeater. And it's really an honor to be here. I'm really, really delighted and really humbled that I have an opportunity to share with you on this topic. I didn't hear the little footnotes before, but that's absolutely, I'm committed to not taking half measures. I want to read something to you. I came into OA in June 1975, and I've been abstinent since December 2nd, 1975. And what is abstinence? I should tell you what that is, because OA has changed a lot in how they define abstinence, and there's a lot of interesting definitions of abstinence and interesting ways of taking candles and chips. And so I'll tell you what my recovery is based on, eating three meals a day and nothing in between. I came here at 180 pounds. My top weight was 189. I lived in fear and terror of it going up every day. Every day was another diet, and every day was another failure. I started eating compulsively, to the best of my knowledge, when I was, I think, 14 years old. And I started being obsessed with my weight when I was, I believe, 13. And I have, like, a little story about that, which is, like, the obsession of the mind, because this, to me, this disease is so much about the obsession of the mind. And certainly I know that, you know, the number of pounds that I lost is not as significant to me as what was going on in my head, although it's very significant, because the first step is to really, there's a lot of principles in step one, but surrendering the food was what I absolutely, was my number one desire, like breathing, like oxygen. I could not live without my abstinence. Because of the horrors that I lived with in my mind, the dark place that I went to on a daily basis where food took me. When I was 13 years old, I was standing in line with a group of 13-year-olds, and we were going to be taking horseback riding lessons. And they lined us up, and they had all the horses lined up. And what the instructor asked each one of us was, how much do you weigh? And when I was 13, my friend Donna Brazil was standing in front of me, and she said, I weigh 113. And I said, I weigh 117. Same height as I am now, and I immediately felt less than. I knew that I should weigh what Donna Brazil weighed, that I was 3 pounds heavier than Donna, and that's my thinking. My thinking is I'm always comparing myself and judging myself based on anything and everything going on in my environment. So I had to learn how to change my thinking here. But I lived and I suffered under the dictates of this dictator in my head that told me I wasn't good enough no matter what. By the time I graduated high school, I was 153 pounds. I entered high school at 117. I guess I lost those 2 or 3 pounds. So I was 153 when I graduated, and I knew that I wouldn't get a date at 153 pounds. You know, that was 1968 when I graduated high school, and I went on a diet. And within 6 weeks, I dropped down to 122 pounds, and I had a line of guys that wanted to go out with me. And I went out with all of them. I had a different date, a different guy every night. But I was a good girl, so but different date, different guy. And I picked one. He was very cute. He was very, very, very cute. Couldn't talk to him. couldn't have a conversation, but he was cute and he wanted to go out with me. And for some reason, out of the long line of guys that probably would have been better options and I would have had a better time with and been able to talk to, I picked him. And after 6 months of dating, he met me at 122 pounds wearing a little green bikini at the beach. I weighed 165. And I dropped out of college. And I went on these midnight binges in my car, which was my binge buddy. And I found myself in different parts of the city, not knowing quite how I got there. But having the white bags from stopping at donut shops and bakeries, whoever was open at that time, because 24/7 didn't exist in 1969, and feeling absolutely mortified with what I was doing to myself. In 1968, I remember sitting in my car, and I was wearing a leather coat, and it was August. I was going to summer school because I was going to get back in college and do the do. Crying my eyes out because I was so terrified with what was happening to me and what this disease I didn't know I had was doing to my spirit and my soul. I was a prisoner in my own skin. Well, I didn't find Overeaters Anonymous for another 6 years. And in that time, I got back on track. I went to college. I graduated. I got a four-year degree. And in my head, with my image of how I'm supposed to look and never looking that way, yo-yoing. I yo-yoed up and down, but the yo-yo always went a little higher every time. And I had very, very distorted vision, even about what I wanted to weigh, because I didn't think it was humanly possible for me to lose the weight that I'd gained as a teenager. I didn't believe it was possible. I knew I would never be able to maintain my weight. I knew it was not possible because I looked at my history. Look at my life. Look what happened as a teenager. All I did was gain more weight and do a lot of things that I really got to write about in my four step. Financial amends. I stole money from my parents. I ate my way through stores. When I got a new car, I would say, I'm not going to do it in this car. The car had feelings. I'm not going to do it in this car because the steering wheel was encrusted with sugar. And when I turned a corner, you could hear like the bags rolling around and the junk in the car. It was like it was a four-wheel garbage dump, but it was mainly in my mind. And not until I found, when I graduated college, I want to say I went on another magnificent diet, and I lost all my weight, and off I went to Europe. My parents gave me a round-trip ticket, which was my dream, was to go to Europe and be able to travel. And my parents somehow scraped the money together. I put myself through school. I didn't have financial help. But I grew up in an environment where the kids were bussed in from Royal Oaks and Encino and all those neighborhoods south of the boulevard, and I learned that we were the have-nots, and that really didn't even have anything to do with it. We were always the have-nots. My mom would open the window and go, they've got a Cadillac, and they're going here on vacation, and we don't have anything. So I grew up with this kind of thinking. I just adopted her thinking. That's how I thought. And it's still part of, it's still part of my thinking, which is why this program is so fabulous for me, because it gives me freedom, which is, I believe, our topic, freedom from half measures. I never thought that I would have anything, what we call recovery today. I came to the program. I was in Europe, by the way, backtrack a minute, for almost a year. I thought I was going to travel for 3 months, but I gained my weight back. I gained my weight back within 10 days of stepping off that plane. I became obsessed. I was obsessed from the minute I got off the plane. Are you kidding? I didn't know how to eat. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a way of living. I didn't have any tools for living life on, as we say, life's terms until I came to this program. I never heard of Overeaters Anonymous, but I started seeing these bumper stickers pop up. And all over, it seemed like they were everywhere in the city right before I came to program, live and let live, and all of our slogans on bumper stickers. One day at a time, I thought there was a secret society. Like, these people all have something in common. What is it? And then I heard something, I believe it was on the radio, but there was a doctor that was talking about the obesity problem in California, which, can you imagine, it's so much, much more serious today and this so many years later, but he had somehow done some kind of, I think, nefarious calculation of how many pounds the state of California needed to lose to get to healthy body weight. I don't know how this guy came up with that, but he mentioned different approaches and different programs, and that is where I discovered Overeaters Anonymous. I never heard of it. So I got on the phone, or I don't know how I found it exactly. Phone book? I don't know, but I found Overeaters Anonymous. And my first meeting, it was very strange. My first meeting was in a church. I'm Jewish. What am I doing here? I had all this doubt about walking through the doors of that church. And the meetings were 2 hours long. For those of you, I know there's a number of long-timers in the room here. There were 2 hours. We had a coffee break in the middle. And I thought, this is it. I'll be able to escape at the break. And so I did. I proceeded to go out to my car. And God bless this woman, Helene. I don't know. I have not seen her for decades. And she walked out to the car with me. And this is kind of a message about not going to half measures when speaking to newcomers. 10 minutes, oh my God. She walked out to my car and she said the magic words that I needed to hear. If you want to lose your weight, you can do it here. And that's why I came to OA. I didn't come here to stay fat and be serene and get emotional growth and development and become spiritual. I came here to lose weight. That is what I came here for. And with that mission for my life, you know, I didn't have a choice. I felt I didn't have a choice. And on page 25, and I brought the small version here, which my dog, we've got two dogs, and one of them really loves to eat my books. And so I've had so many books consumed by my dogs that I have to pretty much hide them, but he actually finds where I hide them. Page 25. If you are, this was me, and it is today. It has not changed. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. In my first 6 months in the program, I broke my abstinence twice. The second time I broke it was a very minor binge, but I was in a borrowed car. My car was broken. I was going to have lunch with my mother the next day, a terrifying experience for me at that time. I was living with two people were living with me, two young women that I really didn't like. But I invited them in. They wanted to move to a better area, and they moved in with me in my two-bath apartment. And I made the decision. I borrowed one of the roommate's cars, and I drove to do my binge. And in the middle of this binge and in the middle of consuming the last of all the items in the white bag, and with the ice cream cone in my hand, I stopped and I prayed. And I didn't have a higher power. I didn't know what the higher power was. I didn't have a spiritual program. I didn't know what I really believed, but I knew that I had to stop or I was going to drive the car over the bridge because I couldn't go on one more minute with my thinking. It was killing me, and the eating was a vehicle for killing me, so I had to stop. And since then, my life has really been remarkably transformed. It's been 39 years of abstaining. Remarkable. But the changes are physical, emotional, and spiritual. So my belief and my experience is that I had to get abstinent and find a disciplined manner of living in order to get the emotional and the spiritual recovery. Now, I've been in therapy most of my life, and I know I have a very short period of time here. She's going to flip up the five-minute sign in 2 seconds. I can see it coming. But I started in therapy at the age of 16, and I was in therapy with different therapists for 10 or more years at a time most of my life. And every one of them, after the age of 30, when I started talking about I'd like to meet somebody, told me that with my background and my emotional history with the disturbances in my family, very legitimate disturbances, clinical diagnosis disturbances, that I would not be someone who was capable of being married and could not find a mate and have a relationship, a sustaining relationship. And every time that diagnosis was stated, I would become even more sad than I was when I walked into the room. You know what? Doctors don't know what they're talking about, because this room, I've been married now 7 years. Woohoo! Yay! I got married at the age of 57. Girls, if, you know, anything's possible. I'm here to give you hope, physical, emotional, and spiritual. That's my message. We can change. And when we're living a, when I'm living a spiritual life, I don't have to believe what the naysayers say, no matter how many degrees they have, no matter what kind of legitimacy they hold in the eyes of the world. This is a spiritual program, and I believe anything is possible because it happened to me. I didn't believe I could lose my weight, and I absolutely knew that it was out of the realm of my universe of keeping it off at all for a minute, for a day, for a month. It's something I never thought of. I also gave up, I just, as an FYI, I gave up a weight goal. I was talking to someone about that. I had a weight goal before this meeting started, and my goal was always 115 pounds because it, as a teenager, that seemed to be a good weight. But when I came in here, I gave up a goal weight because all I wanted to do was to eat 3 meals a day. I hung on to them tighter than I'm holding onto the mic because that is my foundation. My abstinence is my absolute foundation. And it gives me the opportunity to look at things that I didn't want to look at about me that terrified me and came up in my four step and come up in my daily 10 steps. And I started kind of over again, not with my abstinence, but in many ways my recovery. I got a new sponsor, and I didn't have a sponsor. I'm in another program as well for years. My sponsor has Alzheimer's, God bless her, my former sponsor. And I turn in my food, which is really humbling. I'm like, what? I just asked her, think I should turn in my food? Yes, that's a great idea. I turn in my food. It's really, really hard. It really gives me a lot of, it gives me a good, the experience again of how difficult it is to turn in your food. I didn't have a problem when I was losing my weight, but I've been maintaining my weight for 35 plus years, so it's really humbling to turn your food in. And I want to change it all the time, and I have to keep texting it. I'm going to have this instead of that, and half a pear instead of da-da-da-da-da. And it's really humbling. This is for me, this is about getting close to God. God is my buddy. I have a relationship with a higher power that I never believed possible. I write a letter to God every morning, and that's how I get connected. I get to discard, uncover, discover, and discard the stuff that gets in the way of me being a fully alive human being, and what stands in the way of me being with you, me being of service, me being a good worker among workers. I have my own business today. That wasn't on my list, and it's been going very well. I have an employee and things that were not even within the realm of possibility that I didn't really think about. But my life is very, very rich, and I have 2 dogs, and I have 2 minutes. There's so much to share. You know that the best thing that I can share with you, and what my abstinence gives me is serenity, and it gives me the ability to see my own stuff when it's going on with the help of a sponsor. I don't do this on my own. this is like a team effort. It takes a village, and it's, you know, my village has gotten so big and expansive in this program. It's a spiritual village. We're a spiritual community. And the one, I guess, last thing I want to share is that the language that I heard in this program from the time I walked in, which is why I walked back into that room with Helene, was that I heard the language of love, the language of acceptance, the language of I'm okay. What I heard was, you weigh, this is what came to me. No one said this. You weigh 180 pounds. We love you. You're okay. And that gave me the opportunity to accept myself and to say, it's possible to change. I didn't want to stay at 180. I was the walking dead when I came in here. So I did want to say one, I mentioned something about giving up the weight goal. I literally gave up the weight goal. I said, I'm just going to hang on to this abstinence. And it made me thin. It made me really thin. In fact, it made me 10 pounds thinner than I am now. On that abstinence. And I had to, over years, learn how to eat a little more, because the thought of going back to food was so absolutely terrifying that I stayed on what we used to call the gray sheet. And so that, I was stayed pretty close to that and kept me very, very thin, but it gave me a way to change and to start looking at myself and to finding a higher power and to find relationships with other people and to become a better human being. That's not what I came here for, but that's a lot of what I got. Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
And now, thank you so much, Barbara. And next we have Dave to share for 20 minutes.
I just hope my phone is off. I'm Dave. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Dave.
And I was going to time myself, but I pushed the button. There, I did. I pushed it. It's on. Okay. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope. And when I first saw this topic, I wanted to be on the 12-step panel tomorrow, but I won't be here tomorrow. So I said, well, you know, we'll do whatever we have to do. Thank you so much. That was an incredible story. I wrote down why she was sharing. Well, I'm the half measures guy. You know, if anybody's done this thing wrong, it's been me. You know, I came here August the 17th, 1976, a little bit after her, and a lot of good people came in the 70s. Yeah, can I say? Am I allowed to say that? And so, and I went on the gray sheet. You know, and I weighed over 300 pounds. I went to the meeting at Second and Pepper in El Cajon at the W. Hall Middle School. And there is one I always just say, well, none of those people were at the meeting or here in OA that were at the meeting. Well, there are two meeting people that are still here from my first meeting. And they're doing great. I was amazed because you talked my language, you know. But how I got here was I did the shots and pills and diet, you know, all this stuff that wasn't popular for men to do. You know, thank God the Navy guys started coming, and it made me feel a little more comfortable, because there were hardly any men in the program then. There was Virgil, Jose, me, and Ignacio Cota, and Rick White once in a while. I knew them all, you know, and it was all women. And when I lost all my weight and my wife divorced me, it was wonderful. You know? I won't comment further on that, but when I walked in the door, I said, where's the food? Well, they didn't have, there wasn't a big emphasis on the big book and all that stuff in the meeting, but they did have the OA cookbook. Remember that? And I ate the OA chili. Oh, God, I can say OA chili. But I followed the gray sheet and I lost 130 pounds right away. Too fast, actually. I ended up in the hospital for, and I won't discuss that either. But so I had to do something. I think 3 years into the program, I finally got a male sponsor. And that was a big step for me because I was afraid of men. So he had me do some writing because I wouldn't write by myself because my affirmation was, I'm just fat, dumb, stupid, and ugly. Ha ha, isn't that funny? And people would laugh along with me. But that didn't go over. All of a sudden one day, and I'll talk about that, in a minute, but I wanted to tell you about myself. And 10 years into the program, a perfect abstinence. I weighed and measured everything. I wouldn't think of taking that first compulsive bite. And I to my own self-evaluation is I got complacent, you know. Is that all there is? I've been on the retreat committee. I've been the chairperson of the intergroup. I've done all these things. I've been a conference delegate. I was almost your trustee, you know, but I had enough awareness to know that I wasn't ready to do something. I didn't want to, you know. But I couldn't say no, and people wanted me to run. And so at the convention, I said, you know, I can't do this. I'm on shaky ground. And I saw a member of the board wanted to talk me out of it, and they wanted me to come to breakfast. And I went to breakfast with them. And, oh, my God, they had a wonderful breakfast. I won't go any further with what they had. And I said, that ain't happening to me. I'm not going to be a trustee if that happens to you. And it's tough being a trustee. I have a lot of respect for those people. So I went out and ate again. I got married. My wife, I found out after we married that my wife was an alcoholic. And she hid it from me, you know. And so I had to get over that. What's the word I'm looking for when somebody betrayal, you know? And so I ended up in another 12-step program for people that have alcoholic family and things like that. And that got me back more solidly into OA. I told my male sponsor in that program, I love going to the Thursday night men's dinner that we have, but, you know, the reason I love it is I'm a compulsive overeater, you know. So I came, you know, so, and people used to call me on the phone 10 years in the program, the first 10 years, and they'd say, 15, I've done 15 minutes or 15 more? 15. Oh, okay. So people would call me up and say, what do I do? I'm at the 7-Eleven, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on the hotline, and I'd say, well, just don't eat no matter what, you know. And I don't know how to do that, Dave, you know. So I was one of those kind of people. Well, then when I came back, I couldn't not eat no matter what. I couldn't do it, you know. And a lot of people tried to help me and get back on my feet. And like we do in OA, when I came back to the meetings, I was really embarrassed and shame, full of shame. And nobody said, why did you leave? What did you do that for? You were wrong in doing that. You know, they just said, we're glad you're here, you know. So that's a beautiful thing about Overeaters Anonymous. So into half measures. I looked at this and I said, you know, I just don't relate to this topic, you know, because I've dodged step studies for years. I've dodged a lot of things for years, but I always stayed involved in the program somehow. Even, you know, the way I got back in is I did the soda machine service, you know, and I had to, people say, I lost a dime in the soda machine. What are you going to do about it? You know, I said, well, I'll give you a dime back, you know. And I had to come and fill the soda machine up, so I had to come to meetings. So, you know, it's amazing what brings you back, you know. But through all that work that I had to do when I came back, this topic comes up now, and I look at this and I say, you know, what happened to me was I started to meditate about this. I'll get this out of the way. My wife died October the 1st of last year, and that all tied into this thing because my abstinence has never been better after she passed away. It doesn't have anything to do with her being a, not, you know. I didn't understand why until I got this topic, and I started to meditate and read a little bit about it. And it says after, it says half measures avail us nothing. It says we stood at the turning point, and I woke up with this turning point. What was the turning point? And so I wanted to just talk about some of the turning points that I wrote about that helped me in this program. The first turning point that I wrote about was the utter humiliation of eating, and I won't say what kind of dessert it was, but I was sitting in the cafeteria at North Island Naval Air Station with a bunch of people in the morning, and somebody had this big dessert. And I weighed 300 pounds or more. And I was meditating on their dessert, what I was doing. Who says I can't meditate? And so, and they said, I'll let you eat that, fat boy, if you'll put it all in your mouth at once. That's the kind of stuff I used to do. And then I went across the street and they heard, hey, we heard you ate that thing and put it all in your mouth. I said, yeah. So then to get more attention, I laid on the table and they put a funnel in my mouth and poured a Coke down it. And I drank the Coke, see. And then I went into the machine where they had all the vending machines and I bought a candy bar. But that's the kind of thing I did, you know. But that was a turning point. I walked out in the hallway, I'll never forget it, and I felt something. Wow, a man feeling something. That's amazing, isn't it? My sponsor used to say, Dave, you wouldn't know a feeling if it hit you in the windshield. He said, how do you feel? I said, I feel bad. He says, bad is not a feeling. Can you be a little more vague? And I had to look up what the word vague meant. So this been the journey for me was to start feeling things, you know. And so that was one of the turning points for me, was the utter humiliation of that experience. And I went to my doctor and I said, I need to get the stomach bypass surgery. I heard about it. I need that. I pay $61 for my Kaiser Permanente health insurance. I want the bypass surgery. She says, well, sorry, you don't have high blood pressure. Now it's an industry, but at that time, you had to have something wrong with you, you know. She wouldn't give it to me. So she says, here's two options for you. I said, well, your diet didn't work that you gave me. She said, well, it did while you were working it. She was right about that. And, you know, I would go on these diets and lose all the weight, and then the guys in the shop say, come on, it's Christmas, you know. Have some food to eat, you know. And I would, you know, and then I, of course, Monday never came. So she said, there's two programs. I think I'm crazy. The way I eat is crazy. I figured that much out. She says, thank you very much. She says, I think what you need is a self-help group. And she says, I know of two. There's Weight Watchers and Overeaters Anonymous. I said, what are they? She says, well, the only thing I know about it is Weight Watchers cost money and Overeaters Anonymous doesn't. And I said, that's where I'm going. So I ended up at the meeting with the kind of people that you are that welcome me. And I mean, I took a bath once a week, whether I needed it or not. That's the way I felt about it. And sometimes I was so tired when I came home, I just slept in my clothes, you know. And I was there with my shirt tail hanging out, and, you know, and people were glad to see me. So the second turning point was my first OA meeting. That's what I wrote down here. And then ending a relationship with somebody I met in the program was very painful. And all these things caused me to reevaluate myself. You know, I didn't know that was happening at the time. Then I was divorced by my first wife, and my divorce papers said, respondent suffered severe personality change as a result of being in the program of Overeaters Anonymous. That's almost verbatim. It's on the papers, folks. And my sponsor, Pete, says, thank God he suffered a personality change. And I was crying and he was laughing. But that forced me to live alone for the first time in my life and deal with my abandonment that most adopted children like me have. And I didn't know that, but I got to deal with that. That was another problem I had. If you left my apartment, I just a chill went through my body. I'm just going out to get a Coke in the Coke machine, Dave. Calm down. I'm a grown man, and I'm sleeping with the lights on. That's how I came into this program. So then, you know, getting married again and finding about my wife's alcoholism, that forced me to get help. So that's, you know, that's what happened to me. And I attended, then I read some books that really helped me. I can't say the title of them. They're not program books. But they really helped me. One of them was about being a man. I'd never read anything like that. I didn't know that I hadn't had an initiation, that my father worked all the time and didn't pay any attention to me. So that's why I chased all these other men around. I could go all day with that. And then the endless inventories with Pete and Bill and Don R's workshops, those things changed my life. When I made a decision to share my fifth step, that was a big, big thing. Is that it? Oh, okay, that's her phone. And the numerous 10th step and experiences. And then finally, my wife's death. What am I going to do? I've been married to her for 28 years. She was 8 days from being 5 years sober. I was planning on getting her a gold coin. And I said, in my grandiosity, you know, the nice guy in the program who's a counselor says, you know, you need to go some grievance counseling, you know. And I walked out of the meeting. I said, thank you very much, you know. And I walked out of the meeting and I thought, I've been in the program 38 years. This is my grandiosity. I don't need to go to a grievance group or go get counseling. And the guy's a sweet man. He's trying to help me. I go to grievance groups and I have counseling. And I went to this group and I got a piece of paper there with some steps on it. It's the program, for God's sakes, you know. It says talk about your feelings. And there's no right or wrong way to grieve. And sorrow's not a sign of spiritual weakness. That's a really tough thing for us. And I saw those men in that meeting that can't cry. And I've cried a lot of tears. And I went to see this counselor who's a third my age. I walk in her office and I start bawling my eyes out. Well, I didn't the last time. She says, Dave, you're getting better because you're doing all the things you need to do to recover. So when I saw this half measures thing, it says, you know what? I don't do half measures. I've been going at it. I sit in the spa and meditate. It says, do things to take care of yourself. Isn't that what our program says? And the one thing that jumped out at me, it says, be quiet. It says, slow down. That's been a problem for me all my life. When I was a little boy, they had a dog collar on me. Because I came in the program, I was that way. I get excited about something and I go nuts, you know. So slowing down has been hard for me, but that's what I've been doing, you know. And then, you know, the turning point happens, and after I do that, I receive what I want to say. It says, we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. That's the solution to the half measures. I can't do anything about my half measures, but God came in and he gave me grace, a free, unmerited, unwarranted gift from God that he gives us when we surrender. A lot of you people know that. But it's worth having grace because it brings peace to your life. And what I realized grace for me was the day after my wife died, my daughter paid $1,000 and flew down and was there for me, my daughter that I adopted. She says, I'm here, Dad. I'm going to keep an eye on you. And I don't think you're doing good, I'm taking you home. Oh, my God. I never knew she'd do that. People that I didn't know, a lady brought me food. She cooked meals for me. She says, I want to help you. I love you. I saw for the first time, maybe not the first time, just how much people care about me. It was unbelievable. And I had to receive that, which is hard for some of us to receive. So all these things are brought me where I'm here today. And when I go see the counselor, she says, you know, Dave, you're getting better. And I listened to her. And I read my journal to her. I started journaling like never before. And she said, I go in there and read my journal. This is what I did. This is what I said. This is how I felt. And she said, you know, you just need to be patient with yourself. And I think that's true for us in the program. You know, if this was easy, there'd be a line around the block, you know. And I think my wife taught me one thing, and I loved it. I loved her for this. I dreamed and I prayed and I wrote in my letter to the at the men's retreat we go to, we write a letter to God, and I wrote in everything. I'm very grateful for my wife's sobriety, because I wanted that for her, you know. And what's really powerful, and this is the program to me, the guy next door, Anthony Hurtica, he'd be in such a rage all the time that I would stand my car till he went in the elevator and went up to his. I was afraid of the kid. You know, he was just cursing and yelling and screaming. And I would ask my wife, what's that noise next door? She says, that's Anthony fighting with his mother. Mm-hmm. My wife went over and said, you're going to an AA meeting with me. You got a problem. He says, okay, Pat, you ought to see that guy. He's the softest, sweetest man in the world. Mm-hmm. That's the 12-step program. Mm-hmm. It's when we carry the message to somebody else, you know. And I've had that experience, and you can't take that away from me. And I saw my wife have that experience. So that's, you know, the other thing I wanted to say is I'd rather have, it says progress, not perfection. That's what I was going to talk about. But I think that's the thing. After it talks about the turning point, it talks about, you know, we're not saints, but we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. So I think perfection isn't attainable by me, but excellence is attainable to all of us. We can have an excellent day. We can have an excellent food day, one day at a time. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dave. And last up is Sarah P. Come on, girl.
Hi, my name is Sarah P. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi,
Sarah. So I'm going to stand in front because my half measure is to stand back there. So I have an abstinent state, and it is August 6, 2012. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I have a home group, which is the Light a Candle meeting in Brentwood. And if you're new or if you're in your first 30 days, I suggest that you get those three things. You know, my home group, if I don't show up in a couple weeks, you know, people start to call me. I've had a commitment there for the last 2 years. It's kept me pretty reliable. When I was coming down this hallway, I said to myself, God, get to that room before me because this is terrifying. I'm scared. God, get there first. And I got here and I couldn't see God. And then people started to filter in. And I saw my friends and I saw my sponsor and I saw her sponsor and her sponsees. And then I saw all of you guys. And for me, when I was in my disease 3 years ago, I was in a really bad relapse where I gained 125 pounds. And I was in my bedroom looking for God because I had had program and I knew what program was. And I was in my bedroom searching for God. And I was binge watching Netflix and eating all day long. And I couldn't see God. But when I went to my first OA meeting, there he was, because God speaks to me through all of you guys. So I just want to say thank you to all of you for saving my life one day at a time, because that's what this is. This disease wants me dead. There's no doubt about it. I consider my disease a flood, and it comes down after me, and it tries to bury me in water, so I drowned. And so then I put up these blocks, and they're these little dams that go up, and they have to do with the steps and working, you know, working a good program and going to meetings. And then all of a sudden, a little tributary starts, you know, and water starts flowing out the side, and before you know it, there's another frickin' river there. And so I get to keep every day working on that, you know, and it's led to some really amazing places, and I'm really grateful for it, and it is painful, but I'm in a lot of gratitude today. I've been abstinent since August of 2012. My abstinence, to qualify, is three meals a day. I weigh and measure my food. I send my food to my sponsor in the morning, and she tells me I do that because she can't help me at the end of the day after I've eaten it. And so I get to be humble. We work the steps every morning, Monday through Friday. I call her at 6:15, and I give her my writing, and I'm currently just about to start the eighth step. I've been in relapses. I came into the rooms in 1994 in my 20s, and I only had 10 pounds to lose. And my first relapse, I gained 60 pounds. And my second relapse, I gained 80 pounds. And my third relapse, I was hospitalized for anorexia. And then this last relapse, as I said, I gained 125 pounds. And it's just convincing to me that the disease is exceptionally progressive. And so I take it very, very seriously. 3 years ago, what it was like 3 years ago in my relapse, I was unemployed and unemployable. I weighed 280 pounds, and I could not tie my own shoes. I had to have my fiancé tie my shoes for me. I went to a doctor for a gastric bypass, and I didn't qualify because I needed a pacemaker at 40 years old because I had done so much damage to my body. And I thought, let's give OA another try. You know, he had actually suggested a medical diet program at that point. But I had enough program in me to know that this is where my solution was. I was a compulsive eater. I couldn't stop binging. I couldn't stop eating. I couldn't stop killing myself with sugar, flour, food, whatever. I was just desperate to fill a God-sized hole with food. I came here and I met Jeff, who actually asked me to be on this panel, and he was at one of my first meetings, and I hated him. I hated everybody. I hated everybody that was new that wasn't here before. I was wondering where the fuck, I'm so sorry. I was wondering where the heck everybody was. Where was everybody? Where are my fellows? Where was my God squad? Where were you guys? And I realized that I had left, and people's lives changed. People moved on. People left program. And here with these nut bars, you know, Jeff and all these other crazy people. But thank God they were there. Thank God they were there to catch me. He caught me. He was one of the people who caught me and said, this is a safe place to come when you're in relapse. You know, just come and sit. Don't leave. Get a sponsor. Start working the steps. And, you know, little by slowly, it started to take hold. And so how much time was that? I looked at you and I didn't even see what you were doing. Okay, sorry. It's all a blur. You're all a blur now. They say in the Brady Bunch, look in the audience and pretend everybody's in their underwear and you'll feel a lot better. Now I don't remember what time I got. So, but you look great. So, okay, came in. I had no job. I was unemployable. Couldn't tie my shoes. And my sponsor had me, one of the first jobs my sponsor had me do was try and write a resume and become, you know, willing to write a resume. And I think it took me 6 months to get that resume written. I was really adamant that I didn't want to go into the workforce, that I wanted to continue to be taken care of. I had no skills. I hadn't finished college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do in life. I was a career babysitter before program, and I hated it. So I wrote a resume. And I ended up getting a babysitting job that I held for a little over 2 years. And I was really, really instrumental in my recovery. And this is where, you know, I consider it a full measure to go to work for somebody else, to show up every day, to be accountable, to ask what I can do, me, the most selfish person in the world, to show up and be of service. If they wanted me to wash their toilets for them, I mean, that sounds so horrible, but I did it. I'm a nanny, you know, I did it. I showed up. I whatever you want me to do, I'll do it today. Not in a degrading way, but in a service way. I'm there to be of service to you. And I talk about that job because my real profession is that I'm a photographer. And my entire life. As far as my work goes, I've been a babysitter. And to me, it has been soul crushing. And 3 weeks ago, I let go of a job, my babysitting job, in a graceful, compassionate way. And I'm in my second semester of photo school. And it is the gift of this program. It is working the steps. It's showing up to meetings. It's learning how to take direction. And today I'm in school, and my sponsor teaches me to sit in the front row, raise your hand, open your notebook. You know nothing. You know, just go there to learn. And it's really humbling. You know, the Seven Steps talks a lot about humility. That's what going back to school as a 45-year-old woman has been. These kids are really young, and they're really rambunctious, and they talk when the teacher's talking, and that is none of my business. It's none of my business. Someday my sponsor says, when I'm a teacher, when I'm standing in front of the class, I get to tell them to be quiet, but it's none of my business as a student to tell the other students how to behave. So there's some humility right there. So back to half measures. My OA program is a train. And if I get on the train conducted by God, it's a smooth ride. But when I'm starting to hop on and hop off the train, I become like the guy who's a train jumper, and eventually he's going to lose a limb. And there's my half measures, when I get on and off, or when I decide to hold on but let my feet drag behind the train. That is really uncomfortable. I don't want to be dragged anymore. So I'm getting on the train. As long as I stay on the train, the scenery will change. It changes. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes I don't like it. But the scenery will always change. Green grass, snow, all the good things that being abstinent can afford me. And I don't have to drive that train today. My higher power is driving the train, and all you guys get to come on. And it's really, really lovely here. So if you're new, if you're struggling, just get on the train. Let go. This is a beautiful place to be. I came here 2 years ago, and I came to this particular birthday. It wasn't here in this location, and it was a life changer for me to see recovery, to be a part of. Someone had given me a free ticket to the luncheon on Saturday. There was a luncheon, and it was the first time since being in recovery that I felt like a part of something. Here was this camaraderie. You know, we have all the camaraderie of, it says in the big book, the ship's going down, and all the camaraderie of diamond. We're getting through this together. You know, one hand in my sponsor's hand, one hand in my fellow's hand, because I don't have a sponsee right now, in the hand of my fellows, and I don't get to have a hand to pick up my food, my extra food. I don't have a hand to beat myself over the head with. Boy, am I rambling as bad as I sound like I am? That is, but thank you. Oh, Kate, I love you. So anyway, back to today. God, what do you want me to say? This is not about me. This is about my higher power talking through me to you guys, because that's what you do for me. I'm living a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I'm so grateful. It reminds me of Roseanne. So much gratitude for her and this program. You know, when the scale's going up and up and up, and I couldn't stop it, and I knew that 300 pounds was the next stop on the train. It was demoralization like I couldn't believe. And boy, I'm so grateful. I just want to thank my sponsor for helping me on a daily basis, her sponsor. And I'm going to end a little bit early, if that's okay, because I've said all I can say. But thank you so much for all being here.
Thank you, Sarah. That was. Thank you, panelists, Dave and Barbara as well. Now is the time for questions and answers. I don't know how this is going to work, but I'll just please raise your hand, and I will call on as many questioners as possible for the next 20 minutes. Your question can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question? In the microphone.
Can you talk about how half measures led to a relapse, especially Sarah? I know you have experience with that.
Okay, the question is how, I can't remember the question.
Keep coming back. So the question was, how did half measures lead to my relapse? So for me, I stopped doing what was working. My meetings got light. There were some sponsorship calls that I'd missed. You know, surrounding myself in the herd was really important, and I started to let go of my herd. And all of a sudden, I found myself on the outskirts of that herd. And then when the disease comes nipping, when something bad happened, you know, like a disappointment, there were little bites at my ankles. And for me, then it became like a bite of a sugar-free cookie, and I was off and running. But the half measures for me were really not doing what worked yesterday and taking direction. So as far as working with what goes yesterday, it works today, but I always feel like I have to just increase it just a little bit. Like it's a millimeter more than what I did yesterday. Because if I just do exactly what I did yesterday, I feel like I coast a little bit. And coasting, as we all know, is a downward slide. You know, eventually I'm back down at the bottom of the slide. So I just had to keep up a little bit more. And it's not as hard as it sounds. I mean, a millimeter is not that... It's less than that, you know, just a little teeny step. Just, did I answer your question? Thank you.
And now, yes, the next question. Could you come up to the microphone?
Sure. Hi, Kelly, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much. My question to you is, in staying in half measures, I really struggle with dinners out with people that are not in program, and it's always about trying as many different things and sharing, and it really screws me up. So my question is, what can I do to turn that half measure and into a full measure of program? And what help me with that situation, if whoever.
Hi, I'm Barbara. Compulsive overeater. Well, when I needed to lose weight, I was on a losing abstinence. So it was very clear that I ate exactly what was on my food plan. So I did not go out to eat very often. But if I was in a situation where I would be eating out, I ate what was on my program. That was it. I eat what's on the plan. This is the plan. And so now maintenance is different, but losing my weight, I just stuck to that. That's my commitment. I didn't think about eating anything other than what my life depended on, which was my abstinence and the food plan that I developed with my sponsor. Anybody else want to answer that?
Sure. I'll chime in on that, too, because my sponsor has me do this thing where, since I commit my food in the morning, she has me look, if I know I'm going to go out to a restaurant, especially a new restaurant, every restaurant has a website, and they have menus posted. And so I can look at the menu in the morning and tell her what I'm going to eat and then, you know, let her make the decision whether that's a good choice for me or not. Plus, a lot of the times I stick to restaurants that I know California Chicken Cafe. I'm not advertising them, but I know certain restaurants have abstinent food for me. I can find a piece of chicken almost anywhere. So, yeah, if that's helpful, restaurants have websites. David, do you want to?
Dave, compulsive reader. Dave. Haven't broken any furniture yet, so. What I wrote the other day was, you know, what I do to keep on the path is I get up every day. The first thing I do is sit on the toilet and read my books, my spiritual books. You know. That's what I do. And then I've got my clothes in the bathroom and I go for a walk. Just about every day. I think I missed yesterday because I woke up late. I slept in. My dog didn't wake me up. His fault. So, because that's something us overeaters don't, either we do it too much or we don't do it at all, exercise, you know. And it's not in any of the tools, I know that. This is what I wrote, how to keep away from half measures. Just get a sponsor. Find a food plan, write a binge food list, weigh and measure your food, plan your meals. That's freedom. Frame the meals. There's a beginning and an end. This is what I have to do. And my other friend Don, not this Don, but my other friend Don, who I like equally as well, plan your eats and eat your plan, you know, one day at a time. You know, a gal called me at Christmas time. And she said, I'm going to go back and be, before she went, so I'm going back to be with my family. And I said, really, is that going to work for you? She goes, yeah, it's probably all right. Well, it didn't, you know. And so she called me on the phone. She says, the next time I tell you that I'm going to visit my folks for Christmas, hit me in the mouth. So, you know, I mean, so I, what I'm trying to say is, maybe I need to be around the program more. Maybe I need to get involved with some service. Volunteer to fill the Coke machine or whatever, you know. Keeps me to meetings, you know. I go to more meetings now than I've been into a long time because I need them and I want them. And I enjoy them, you know, and that's where my family is, you know. So I told my sponsor, I said, when I got divorced, I said, you know, this program screwed up my family. And he said, we're your family. I didn't understand what he was saying at the time. I do now.
Next question. Yes, please.
Yes. Hi, I'm Pat, recovering compulsive eater. And I know some of you addressed this, but where I'm from back in the Midwest, we have several people in my meeting that are in kind of continuous relapse, and then some that go away and come back and whatnot. So could you talk a little bit more about what would be helpful to you being in relapse? And I know you've talked about that some, but if we could address that a little more.
Can I just clarify your question? Do you mean helpful for you to tell your members who are in relapse or helpful to help them? Right. Well, my experience from my relapse was, you know, folks would call me and I didn't want to hear it. You know, I had to be willing and ready when I was willing and ready. You know, my knees had to be scraped enough by being dragged by the train before I was willing to get back in here. And it meant for me that I had to hit the weight that I had hit. Because I wasn't ready to do the work until my sides were splitting. You know, I wasn't ready to do the work until I was dying. And so for me to wish that on someone, you know, to be willing is one thing, but for me to try to force it on somebody else, I think is nearly impossible. And just keep an open seat for them. You know, just keep them in place. Sorry, I don't have anything more. I wish I could save them too, but, you know, they'll get there.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, next question. Go ahead. I'll just repeat it if you want.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Kate. Okay, thank you. I think what the question is posed that is turning your will and your life over to the care of a higher power the answer to?
Yeah. I was Dave Compulsive Reader. How we ask his care and protection for with complete abandon. That all comes after the half measures thing, you know. And I think what the authors are telling us is this program's about finding a higher power first and foremost. So sometimes if you have trouble with that in the beginning, they told me I said, I don't know about this God thing, you know. I've done a lot of bad things, you know. And they said, well, why don't you just act as if one day at a time there is a God? That really helped me, you know. And then and about prayer, we had a wonderful leader, Dottie Shore, passed a long time ago. If some of you have got to know who she is. And she opened prayer up for me. She said, if you have trouble praying, the first prayer is when you've got a resentment against somebody is, God bless the son of a bitch. It helped me. All good prayer starts from there. God help me, whatever it is. So, you know, everybody's at a different place. But that's the solution because it's A, we're compulsive overeaters and cannot control our eating. B, that no human power could remove our overeating, and see that God could and would if He ever saw it. That's it. So we're seeking God, and we do it in all different ways, and we all have different ideas about God. And so then there's another place in the 12 and 12. We say don't read anything but OA literature here. It says in there, the libraries and bookstores are a treasure trove for all seekers, and they are, you know. So I look for spiritual books. I have a favorite author. I'm not going to say his name. I'll tell you after the meeting. But I read him. He talks to me. You know, I want a God that's with me. I'm a little kid that suffers from abandonment inside me. Little Davy. I talk to him. He was adopted when he was 2 years old. You know, and my mother, God bless her, I was cross-eyed, and she picked me out of all. I want the cross-eyed little one there. Why in the world did she do that? That woman adored me to the day she died, you know. I would come into the nursing home and the nurse would say, David's here. And she goes, oh, David. She had a lot of strokes that she couldn't say, talk very well. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, that's the key to the whole thing is however you find it. And everybody does it different, you know. But I don't know if that helped.
And the next question, anybody else? One more. Yes, come right.
I'm really loud. Okay. Hi, Miranda, compulsive overeater. Hi. And my question to the panel is just, I feel like half measures are sort of like my relationship with vagueness. I feel like it's the same thing. So if any of you could just speak on vagueness and how that affects your disease.
Hi, I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. I think for me the answer is to follow direction. And when I make a phone call to my sponsor and she tells me that maybe I should do something, even if I think she's nuts at the moment or it really makes me angry, I do it anyway. I do it anyway because I'm here to change my life and to change my thinking and to develop a relationship with God. And so I also do the same thing when I hear someone's solution at a meeting. And I listen to the people that have found recovery. They have found the key to the kingdom. They're abstaining, and they're on a spiritual path. And I believe that God speaks through all of us. They don't have to have a kabillion years of abstinence, but they're on the path. And so I listen to those people, and I find answers for myself that way. And so that's how I, vagueness doesn't work. Vagueness is the land I used to live in. And I don't ever want to go back there. That's like the wrong zip code for me. So the answer is in the rooms and listening to my sponsor, reading the literature, going to literature meetings, writing, I mean, working the 12 steps.
So vagueness for me before my relapse was, my last relapse was, I remember committing a bowl of fruit. It was a fruit salad. And really what it was a bowl of fruit salad. And so vagueness for me, when I say to my sponsor I'm having a salad, she'll ask me what's in the salad. You know, I can put a lot of things in a salad. And so when we're specific about it, you know, if that helps. If it's specific, I think she calls it the disease of vagueness. You know, there's those gray areas. Oh, I'm going to hit a meeting this week. Well, which meetings are you going to go to? Let's have a plan. Or what's your plan for today? What does today look like? What are you going to do to be of service to somebody else? Well, I would like to know the specifics of that. We used to do that in the morning. Do something good for somebody else today. And I say I would do it, but she would ask me in the very first months, what was that specific thing that I was going to do? Well, when I go to CVS, I'm going to let someone stand in front of me. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to be nice. And then I'm going to smile. You know, remember, I would have to say, and I was going to smile. Or I was going to go like this in traffic for one person. And I'm going to smile. You know, the specifics, those help me get out of my disease.
I'm just going to read what came to me when I was thinking about this, and I wrote it down. It's all or nothing at all. I have to put as much time and energy staying abstinent as I put into my food obsession. Can't be a quarter horse. Have to go the distance. Recovery has to be the same, all or nothing. Go to any length to gain and keep my abstinence one day at a time. Full throttle, six gear. My friend Richards is a trucker. I did that for him. So it, you know, whatever that means to you, that's what it's all about, you know. And like somebody said, the program's for people that want it, not people that need it. You know, I meet people that need it all the time, and I try to plant the seed, and sometimes they want it and come back to us, you know. That's it.
Thank you all for participating. I would like to thank Barbara, Dave, and Sarah for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Woo! We are now at our lunch break. The luncheon will start. It's actually 11:47 right now. It's supposed to start in about 15 minutes in the Los Angeles room. You need a prepaid luncheon ticket to eat, but the luncheon speaker will start their share at about 1 o'clock p.m., and you can see the speaker even if you didn't purchase a lunch ticket if you go to the Los Angeles room in about an hour. Thank you for letting me be of service.